Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. You see the messages, you see the commercials, the advertisements targeting African-American consumers, but sometimes they miss the mark. Sometimes the messages just aren't relatable, and sometimes they're just downright offensive. Well, next week, a virtual summit will be held to examine diversity in the media industry. And this year, one of the focuses will be hiring HBCU graduates. Well, joining me to talk about this are Jack Myers. He's the founder of Media Village and AdvertisingDiversity.org. Serena Anthony, Chief People Officer of North America at Group M. And Dr. Gracie Lawson-Borders, Dean of the Howard University School of Communications. If you have comments or questions about diversity in the media, in the advertising industry, give us a call. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Jack, Serena, Dr. Borders, thank you all for joining the conversation.
Thank you so much for having us.
Sure. Before I get to this event next week, I first want to ask you, Dean Borders, about diversity in the media for some in the Black community. It's old hat, and yet we are still seeing examples of why this is a critical thing. Talk to me from your perspective why you believe that this is the case.
Well, it's the case because we sit here in 2022 and we still unfortunately are saying this is the first person to be the station manager of color. This is the first reporter to be the political reporter of color. So it tells us we still have so much work to do because we have the people that we're preparing. They're creative. They're prepared. And now we have to do everything to make sure we get them in these positions because we should have that multiplicity of voices so that when we talk about the messages we see and the images we see, they bring a perspective that widens the culture, the understanding, the different ways people are living and experiencing things. So it's important for us to not let this get away from us. We have to continue to push to make the changes that are needed in the media.
You know, it's one thing when you're talking, for example, about African-American consumers. And yes, we know that there are so many examples of just blatant mistakes. A couple of years ago, Prada selling T-shirts with a monkey kind of printing with these great big huge red lips. We saw Amazon with a monkey on a shirt, and they had a young Black boy as part of that advertisement. But Dean, are there other more subtle examples? I have a few, but from your perspective, I think it's the subtlety here that makes this really a critical issue.
Yeah, it's the subtle as well as the overt, and that's why it's so important for us to diversify, because when we get those different voices and those different participants in those rooms, and particularly with advertising, media, I really say communication broadly conceived, because the example you gave are very prominent ones, but they're low-key ones. When there was a recent story in one of our prominent newspapers where they mentioned people who kind of mourned the passing of Kate Spade and how they wore all of this different purses and material, which are very, very expensive. And so that kind of says, well, we're only speaking to a certain audience about this. And so there's always these things that can occur, and someone will say, well, that was not the intent. But you have to step back and say, is someone in that room, and say, before we describe this, let's think about how it may be perceived on the other end. Mm-hmm. And you need those multiplicity of voices in that room to help do that.
Yeah. Jack, talk to me a little bit about why you founded this organization and your expectations for the conference next week.
Harold, thank you for including us and telling about this important story, and it's an honor to be here with Dean Borders. You're correctly focusing on what's on the screen, what's on the air. But the fact is that in order to change that, to really address it, you need to go behind the screen at the people who are making the decisions. And while there's been growing representation among some diverse groups, the representation in the media and advertising business among the Black community has remained unchanged at about 4%. There are 20,000 jobs open right now in media and advertising in North America. And our goal, and the reason we've created a Black Career Week at MediaVillage.com, is to generate 2,500 of those jobs with Black candidates. And our goal is to generate 2,500 resumes. We founded the organization to address the continued underrepresentation of diverse groups in media and advertising. It was originally founded a dozen years ago to focus on gender representation. We've seen some good growth there and in other categories, but the need for our industry, the advertising and media industry, is clearly to focus aggressively and assertively on growing our Black population behind the scenes in order to improve what your audience sees on the screen.
Serena, as Chief People Officer with North America Group M, you really are at the top of the heap. And, yeah. But you're a white woman. So my question is, when you begin to look at bringing in talent, people of color, particularly, you know, Black people, how do you hire those that may be culturally competent? Because there's kind of a saying in the, you know, in the Black community, all of our, you know, skin folk aren't our kinfolk. We are a very, very diverse community. Not all of us are raised, you know, with the very same kinds of upbringing and experiences. So how do you know when you're trying to bring more Black people into the advertising fold for you?
So I think, you know, this goes back to a point that was made earlier around having the right people at the table. I'm actually an Indian woman.
Okay.
So I am a woman of color. I'm married to a Black man, and I have two biracial children, half Black, half Indian children. It is very important to me. It was part of the reason I took this job in the thick of the pandemic and during, you know, immediately post George Floyd tragedy and the uprising that ensued because of what we know to be a very serious issue in the United States in particular. And what I ensure is, one, that we have the right people on our hiring panels, that we have Black individuals interviewing our candidates, that we have relatable human beings having conversations with our talent. We've got a really long way to go. We are making big strides at Group M. We are trying to unpack some of the systemic challenges that exist within our organization and within the industry overall. My big theme right now is all around accountability, and I believe that that starts at the top. I need commitments from our most senior people around the importance of giving you know, access to Black talent into our organization. I often hear things like, we can't find Black people in the media space. We are not attracting them to our industry. And when we unpacked it, it's because we weren't looking in the right places. And we didn't have systems in place internally to allow those gateways for people to be exposed to our industry, to learn about our industry. And we were very narrowly focused. So, you know, there's work to be done in that regard. But as it relates to how we ensure that we are, you know, not canceling people out who don't quite understand who they're speaking to, it's just ensuring that our panels are diverse, that we include people of color, Black employees into our interviewing process from the onset.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about diversity in media, bringing more African-Americans into the industry. If you have a comment or a question about that, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dean Borders, what is the message to students, for example, that you are talking to at Howard University? What is their responsibility once they graduated and get jobs in the industry? What do you tell them about their responsibility?
Well, Harold, that's a great question because they do have a role. It's important while they're in school, their preparation, learning their craft, being prepared, everything from, you know, internships and experiential learning and any other opportunities to network and be involved, that they take advantage of those, because then they have a responsibility when they go out to extend that, not to just their experience, but to others, to bring others in. I like what my fellow guest said, is we want people around that table in all kinds of forms, those who interview, those who are in charge of decision-making, those who are on the front line, those who are behind the scenes. I'm always telling students, particularly when it comes to broadcast media, there are so many roles that you can make a difference in. In front of the camera isn't the only role. You can make a difference behind the scene, a director, a producer, you know, station manager. You know, we have to show them that when they gain the knowledge and skills that they have, I tell them now they have a responsibility to go out to not just make a difference and be change agents, but reach beyond the place where they stand to make sure others are involved and also prepared to come in and join a part of what we're trying to do as we create all these messages and this content that goes to so many people that needs to make sure all those people feel a place in it.
Jack, share with our audience about this conference next week, how they can participate, mm-hmm. and certainly you want to get the word out. Where can they find it online and the like? Because this is also on SiriusXM, and so I'm sure there are other HBCUs that may be listening, graduates and the like, who may be saying, hey, this is something I want to participate in.
Thanks, Harold. There are opportunities in the advertising business today at all levels of education and experience. So we're focused on HBCU graduates, students, veterans, all those working in government who might not think typically of advertising as a career. So at advertising, at Black Talent Career Week next week at MediaVillage.com and AdvertisingDiversity.org, we'll be telling stories. The leaders of the industry from 40 companies and organizations will be talking about the opportunities. Everyone's welcome to register and submit their resume right now at MediaVillage.com. One story that they'll hear next week, for example, is the president of Serena's company at Group M, Kirk McDonald, tells a story of not having a college degree, having left college, City University of New York, to go to work in the advertising business 30 years ago, and being hired 2 years ago as CEO of Group M without having had a college degree, when the requirements at Group M were that employees could not be hired without a college degree. So the first thing he did when he got there as CEO was to change that rule. So today, the industry is really opening up to a much more diverse group, not just in terms of people of color, but also different experiences, different levels of education. And those are the stories and the opportunities that they'll hear about. We have 16 hours of original programming Monday to Thursday next week. It's open, it's free, and there are a lot of great stories and leaders from all parts of the industry, from technology through to creative, through to on-screen talent, telling how to apply, how to get jobs, how to interview well, and what to do even in their first year on a job or their first day on a job, how to make sure that they're successful. And the industry is also working, and Serena talks a lot about how the industry needs to adapt to retain black talent and how black talent can adjust and understand the reality of the industry they're walking into.
Yeah. I'm going to lose you, Dean Borders, in a few, but I'd like for you to just share some parting thoughts. So much to talk about from your perspective, but please go ahead.
Well, thank you. And yes, I want to jump on what Jack was just saying and what they're trying to convey even in the advertising industry to black students at these different HBCUs and parts that they can play. And so I think it's so important, if I can lead on the note, that I always tell students about the possibilities. And so I want them to know that this particular series next week is really aimed at getting them to join, participate, and see the possibilities. And as Serena shared, and we're all sharing tonight, but I want them to know that you asked me what is their role. It is to take advantage of these opportunities, to understand that we want to have a different environment in media communication industries. And to do that, all of us have a part to play.
Yeah, yeah.
When we open up these doors, when we push for these opportunities, I want them to see the possibilities and take advantage of them.
Yeah, I appreciate your time, Dean Borders. I really, really do. And I'm sure we'll be talking a little bit down the road as this issue continues to evolve. I need to take a quick break, but don't forget, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on WHUR.com. This information will also be on our website after 8:30. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. That's on WHUR. This conversation continues in just a few seconds on Sirius XM. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we continue our conversation about adding diversity, particularly as it relates to African Americans, to the advertising industry, the media industry. How is that done? What are some of the challenges for that? We continue tonight with my guest, Jack Myers, founder of Media Village and AdvertisingDiversity.org, and Serena Anthony, Chief People Officer of North America at Group M. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You know, Serena, you mentioned earlier about some of the kinds of conversations that were being had at Group M regarding bringing a more African Americans into the advertising fold of your organization. I salute you for that. And I'm just curious, was there an aha moment that sparked this corporate level conversation? What happened?
I think, sadly, it took the murder of George Floyd to ignite a fire and a sense of urgency around revisiting policy, revisiting practice, revisiting what our DE&I strategies look like, how we were measuring success, and so I'll say I joined Group M North America in and around that time. It was the summer of 2020. And so the conversation was everywhere. It was from one organization to the next, and it was worldwide. It was a global thing, and people started to actually pay attention. And it was a great time for me to enter the organization, knowing how strongly I feel about how important it is to diversify our teams and our organizations. And so we started to ignite tough conversations. We started to introduce members, African Americans, to the organization that were current employees, to get up and speak about their experience as employees. And I have to tell you, it was rattling for many to hear what an African American's experience in the workplace actually looked like and felt like. And we continued, I mean, we ran, you know, some educational series around unconscious bias, microaggressions. For me, I made all of that training mandatory, where before it was, if you can, please attend. That was no longer going to be an option. We needed cultural sensitivity training. We needed storytelling. We needed to empower our Black ERG groups, employee resource groups, and give them the autonomy to really get involved, lean in, and tell us, management, what they needed for the African American population within the organization. I mean, we've made commitments. We've introduced new tools that teaches managers how to give unbiased performative feedback versus subjective comments. I used to hear often, and you'll find this interesting, you know, I would put somebody forward for a very senior level role within the organization who happened to be African American, and I would hear things like, you know, they were great, but they lacked, you know, gravitas. And I kept hearing this. It was the buzzword. And I was like, what the heck is gravitas? What do they mean by gravitas?
Swag.
And right. So I Googled it, I'll tell you, because it was starting to upset me. And came to realize that when we, these candidates that were being sort of, you know, withdrawn, eliminated from the, you know, whatever role they were up for, all happened to either be a person of color or an African-American talent. And I literally had to make we were using an external firm to help us with some of our unconscious bias training and whatnot, but I had to have them use this example in their training because it was just so frequently abused within our organization. And so we had to unpack that systemic bias that exists within our organization. And we've made quite a bit of headway. So lacking gravitas, we don't hear anymore. It's a term we've unfortunately heard one too many times, describing why a person of color wasn't a great choice for a position for professional growth. We stood up an employee relations practice within our organization because I uncovered that we were seeing a number of our Black African-American talent sort of escalate concerns related to discrimination and or feeling like they were at, you know, the hands of microaggressions within the workplace. And because we did not have a sophisticated sort of operation to investigate these allegations, these escalations that had surfaced, you know, they were kind of falling by the wayside. We weren't giving our employees a safe space to work. We formalized an employee relations practice so that every single employee had a place to go to escalate concerns, you know, issues that they were facing with colleagues, managers, and each and every one of those escalations would be handled with an unbiased approach by a trained investigator in a consistent and equitable way so that people could actually start to feel like they had a safe place to turn to, and eventually that was going to impact our culture. I mean, I can go on and on. We've, you know, career advocacy. We have a career advocacy program that pairs mid-level people of color with professional coaches and senior leaders who act as their advocates and just, you know, open doors to new opportunities and widen their professional networks and career growth. You know, and finally, the other thing we're quite proud of is that we have a Group M media externship program. It's a 10-week media curriculum and mentorship program for all, with an emphasis on people of color who lack access, awareness, and exposure to our media industry. So far, we've graduated over 250 externs, and 95% of them were from the Black and or Latinx community. So We're trying.
Yeah,
we've got more to do, and I'll stop there. But we're definitely trying.
And I have other questions about that too. But it's obvious, you know, to me that you do bring a level of expertise that is needed for the summit, and a message that a lot of people need to hear. But Jack, my question for you is, why HBCUs instead of Black students or Black graduates from PWIs, predominantly white institutions?
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me about that. What's the difference?
Well, I won't say that it's instead of. It's a area we can focus. It's a concentrated group of qualified black community that we can reach out to. But the work that we're doing at MediaVillage.com, the resume portal that we've connected is for anyone of any color. Black people next week is just a concentrated effort to take the excuses out of the media and advertising industry. Serena appropriately talked about microaggressions and unconscious bias, but she also described what's very conscious bias and macroaggressions in the advertising community for decades that continue to cause this systemic bias, this systemic reality that is preventing black people from joining the industry, and once they get here, from staying. We've been losing over the last decade 70-80% of young black people who come into the industry. We have to take away those excuses and those macro and conscious biases, as well as dealing with the microaggression and unconscious bias. And that's what companies like Group M are doing. What we want to do next week with Advancing Diversity Week and Black Talent Career Week is really focus in on a community of blacks to talk about what's being done in the industry, and also to share advice, counsel, ideas, insights on how to succeed once you enter the industry, and how to be prepared for some of the realities that, frankly, black people at all levels of management, from starting level to senior level, have been battling for decades. Our focus, our effort, is to take down those walls and not just open it up to the black community, but for those currently in the industry, both black and white, to understand that these issues are being recognized, are being open and transparently communicated and shared and being dealt with. There's a long way to go. Everyone in our industry will say the same words. There's a long way to go. I believe that what may feel like a long way to go can be dealt with very quickly if we can fill the resume portal with thousands of resumes and start hiring in at all levels, not just from HBCUs, but from veterans groups, from people who have been working in the government and maybe looking for a new career. Advertising is one option for them.
Serena, obviously, when we're talking about this issue, the bottom line is not necessarily black. It's not necessarily white. It's green. The bottom line is if organizations, whether they are advertising agencies or newsrooms and everything in between, don't have the kind of diversity and also allowing, for example, in this case, black executives or black trainees or people in between who have a voice and feel comfortable, saying to, the chief people officer or the CEO or someone else, that ad that's about to run on Super Bowl Sunday in a couple of months, and it's directed at black people, you really want to take the watermelon and fried chicken out of that because it's
right.
Not. But exactly. I would imagine that can be, as you said, a difficult conversation. And I will just say, when you were just talking about your own personal history, you as an Indian woman married to a black man with biracial children, you bring a really, really unique perspective to a heavy lift.
Right. I do. And it's interesting because if you were to look at me, you would think I was a white woman with blue eyes and tan skin. And I often get mistaken for being exactly that. And I think that if I'm being completely real, I've been on the receiving end of quite a bit of privilege because of that. But I am, this is personal for me. I care very much. I'm a principled human, and I believe very much I want my children to have the same opportunities and accessibility, that I had. And so for me, it is very personal. And so we are, and I'm in an environment working for Kirk McDonald, who is as passionate about diversifying our teams and opening doors for people of color, African Americans, and ensuring that we don't just welcome them into our organization, but we facilitate career growth. And we keep them, we retain, because, you know, we can open our doors and we can create pipelines and partnerships with HBCUs, and we are doing exactly that. But then our job, we have a responsibility after that to retain our talent and to make sure that everyone is receiving the same opportunities across the board. And that's where we've got some real work to do.
Yeah, I will, even, you know, my personal experience, having, you know, spent 17 years as a TV reporter and anchor, and just, you know, a short story, I remember when I was being hired in Buffalo, New York, at the NBC affiliate, and if anybody knows anything about that part of the country, it is very, very diverse. It is a community of neighborhoods and the like, and you have a strong Jewish community, Italian community, African American community, Polish community, Czech community, a Latino community. So it's, you know, it's like that. And I remember my news director, when I was sitting in the interview, she said to me, because the station had no black men reporting or anchoring, and so I was going to be again the only, as has been the case in the past, where I was either the first and or only. And she said, well, we're looking for someone who can, you know, really connect with, you know, the black community culturally, who's willing to go out and do community events and, you know, and so forth and on. And, you know, I'm sitting and I'm listening. And the thing that I really appreciated from that conversation is that she was very, very transparent and talked about the kind of deficits that the station had, you know, at the time. And I said, oh, so you're looking for a brother.
Right.
And she said, yes. She said, I'm looking for a brother. And I said, no, you're not looking for a B-R-O-T-H-E-R. You're looking for a B-R-O-T-H-A-H.
Yeah.
And right. She said, exactly. And I think, and I said, I'm your aunt, you know, but I think that more broadly, Jack, when you're talking about, and this is the HBCU experience, and not just or, but as you said, and when you're talking about bringing on, you know, black people into the advertising industry who are able to sit at the table and say, yeah, during Thanksgiving, it's sweet potato pie. It's not pumpkin pie. And then one of the other examples, and I was hoping that I had a chance to mention this when the dean was on, and I saw this also on television, I don't know, about a year or so ago, where there was some kind of parade. It was a Saturday during NCAA football, and there were, you know, black men, they were wearing purple and gold, and they had their hands up, and one of the announcers said, yeah, hook 'em horns, you know, they've really raised their hands. No, these were members of Omega Psi Phi fraternity.
Right.
And I'm not an Omega, I'm a Kappa, but, you know, that's another conversation. But, you know, but I say all that to say that having, you know, cultural competence for those kinds of subtleties for black people. And again, I go back to you, Serena, you know, where you say, you know, you're an Indian woman, but you're light with blue eyes. And, you know, having had interacted with Indians and knowing that there are so many subtleties.
Right.
Skin color, skin tone, Indians from the north, Indians from the south,
and
all of those other kinds of things are really so important, because if you don't get it right, you're gonna mess up, and then you've got to go to your PR department and fix the mess.
Right. And we're in a culture where you can't really afford to make those types of mistakes anymore. We've got this cancel culture. We've got, you know, you step out of line, you don't get it right the first time. That could have a very, you talked about the green, that could have a very serious impact on the bottom line. And so, you know, we do need that cultural competence. We do need, you know, when we put out communication across our organization, we don't just write something and put it out. We have several sets of eyes to vet every bit of communication that goes out to our population. And we're looking at, you know, we have Lakeisha Paul, who's our head of DE&I. She's an amazing talent. You know, I have her vet every single thing I put out to our people. And I want her to do that because I want to know that I haven't, you know, said something that won't land correctly. I want her to call me out if there's something that's culturally insensitive. I'm not a perfect person and I make lots of mistakes. But in order for us to ensure that the messages land in the way that they're intended, they have to be vetted and we have to be certain and we have to have that awareness and cultural competency so that we can make every single human being within our organization feel like they actually belong. And that's the part that I'm fixated on right now. We all are as leaders. Just how do we create an environment and a culture where we don't have, you know, our highest turnover, the people leaving our organization at the fastest rates be from within our African American talent. And that's what we're seeing.
Jack, unfortunately, so many corporations don't have a Serena Anthony. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, and as a result, how do you have those conversations with organizations, advertising agencies, media companies that don't have the, you know, the insight or the platform, or as I said in the beginning, standing at the top of the heap like Serena is?
I want to respond to that, but I also want to go back to your earlier question.
Sure, go
about
right
why
ahead.
HBCUs, and because I also want to note that there are fewer than a handful of the 100-plus HBCUs who even have advertising as a curriculum. They may have one or two courses under the communications umbrella, but Howard is one of the few that actually have major available in advertising. So the industry itself has a lot of work to do within the HBCU community just to create an awareness and understanding of advertising as a career option.
I agree with that. Yep.
In response to the question of how do you navigate organizations that don't have a Serena or a Lakeisha Paul, the head of DEI, first of all, more and more companies, especially in our industry, are focusing, are aware. I think every industry today is very aware of the need for gender diversity, and that's now expanding out to include more multicultural. Unfortunately, it doesn't always filter down to including a focus on the Black community. I think a bigger issue is that the diversity professionals, those charged with responsibility, who are there and are being hired are not being given the financial support. They're not being given the budgets to really make systemic change within their own organization. They're there often to share the words that are important without the actions. And one of the things that Group M is an example of and why Serena and her work is so important is that they are actually putting innovation and initiatives in place to make a difference. I would say the bigger problem is budgeting and supporting those people who are being charged with responsibility for DEI, and number one, and number two, making sure that a disproportionate amount of that budget gets focused on increasing the Black population within the company, because that's where the industry continues to fail.
Are you suggesting that some companies don't see the value?
That'd be putting words in my mouth you're welcome to do.
I'm asking you know if they're not putting if they don't want to, you know, necessarily, you know, fund or put to have healthy budgets for DEI, diversity, and the like.
Yeah.
Why would they not, unless they don't see the value, or unless somebody didn't say, hey, guess what, or do they, God forbid, do they have to wait for a mistake before they realize that there is an issue that they should be focused on?
Serena, I'll let you jump in on that.
So, listen, this is a complicated issue. It really is, because I believe that there is an innate desire amongst leadership, heads of, to put a concerted, effort into improving in this space. Do the budgets always follow? No. Would this be considered sort of back office expense, overhead expense? Yes. If businesses are prioritizing their dollars, they're putting it, towards, in our industry, billable hours. Now, here's the reality. Our clients will not hesitate in this day and age to call us out if we are pitching for their business and the team are a room full of middle-aged or young white men and women. And we have had instances where we have gone out to pitch for business with an organization that we're trying to bring on or into our family. And they will flat out tell us when we don't win the business that your team was not diverse. The people you put in front of us were not diverse. Now, thankfully, I think we're in a much better place. We are casting our teams in very diverse ways. But to your point, where people will eventually pay attention is when it affects the bottom line and or, loss of business and or the potential to bring on a $20 million account. So we're paying attention. Does there need to be a greater investment? Yes, 100%. But I think we can argue that in so many different ways, so many departments, so many areas of our business will say, I will argue, I need the people function needs, we need more money. We need you to invest because there's nothing more important than our people. And if we prioritize our people, their growth and development, their training, and we put dollars behind DE&I efforts, they will perform. And when they perform, we make money. And so those debates happen. And it's often a negotiation and me going into sales mode because of how strongly I feel about it. But yes, there needs to be a greater investment in this area for sure.
Serena, you've been quite candid about some of the blind spots that you've encountered. But in your capacity at Group M, where have you seen successes since, and I'm assuming they've given you, the power and the influence to make things happen? So where are the successes?
So I think it's a follow to the last bit that we just discussed around investment. We've seen success in some of the programs that we've run. So there's a few. We have a program that we're really proud of that we launched this year. It was something that Kirk McDonald came in and wanted to see happen from the onset and took some time to coordinate and build out our program, but we call it Launchpad. And it's where it's sort of a bulk hiring initiative. We do not have, educational requirements. We do not, it could be somebody, a veteran, it could be somebody who wants an industry change, some of what Jack spoke of earlier. And we allow, hundreds of applicants to apply and sort of sell to us why they should be brought into our program, be trained through a 12-week curriculum, much of the training of which is within the business and on teams and learning on the job. And we promise them a job following the successful completion, and it's a paid program. But following the successful completion of the program, they're embedded and they're hired and they're working for us. And I can tell you, I spoke to the launch pad, the first inaugural launch pad cohort, and I was emotional over how diverse the room was. It took a lot to get this program up and running, and we had to heavily invest. And I don't know if you've seen in the media, we've invested $15 million into our learning and development initiatives, much of which encompasses DE&I efforts. And now we've got 50 people brand new to our organization that have gone through rigorous on-the-job training that may not have even known anything about media advertising prior, that are working in our industry, many of whom are African Americans and people of color, you know, lots of women. There's gender diversity, neurodiversity. We factored in everything through Launchpad, so we're super proud of it. The next cohort will be 100 people coming through the door, because as Jack pointed out earlier, there are, I think we have over 1,000 vacancies within the organization right now, or a 7,000 person operation.
I'll add
MediaVillage.com is where next week and every day your audience can learn more about advertising, register, submit their resume, search about companies, people, and see profiles and interviews with people who look like them.
Well, thank you so much for that. And by the way, for our audience, the North American CEO for Group M, Kirk McDonald, is Black.
He is, yeah. And the Canadian Group M CEO is also a Black man.
Yeah, but he didn't go to an HBCU. I'm looking, he went to...
No,
but,
no.
We'll let him slide on that. Jack Myers, Serena Anthony, and of course, Dr. Gracie Lawson-Borders, thank you all for talking to us. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for having us. Right.
That is Harold. The Daily Drum for this Thursday, October 13th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.